Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Pete, host of the Her Podcast. Hey, welcome to our show in episode 466, creeping up to 500. Oh boy, as we share the truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today her resilience. Oh yeah, this is such an amazing show, and I know it's really going to touch you deeply. Before we begin, just know that the episode is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, vitamins, minerals, and herbs rooted in nature. They've got a special gift for women, the new award-winning Her Life Stages products, providing support all the way through a woman's journey from the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause. They're all such fun times. Okay, I know, I'm just joking. All right, so this is an integrative, holistic approach to having a woman's back throughout her life. To learn more about her life stages, run on over to your local health food store or check it out at Solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off. You'll be glad you did. All right, here's your first reminder. Click on iTunes after the show to rate and review today's amazing show, because the Her Podcast team just sits around waiting for your feedback. That's what we do all day long, twiddling our thumbs. All right, it's time for Her.
The podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind. Her body. Her life. It's all about her.
Now, all of you out there know how much I love that whole issue of resilience, transformation, regrouping after really funkadelic times in your life. And I decided, okay, once again, we're going to revisit that whole issue of how fitness itself, how physical activity, sports, moving your amazing body can be so healing. So we have today Paula Frenetti. Now, Paula, wow, does she have a story. And this is also associated with the National Senior Games because she is a competing basketball player. I was a forward forever, all the way through medical school. You know, just give me that damn ball. That's what they do to the tall ones. So here we have Paula Frenetti, better known as the Rebound Planner. She's an author, inspirational speaker, certified health and wellness coach, whose mission is to enable people of all ages to bounce back better than ever from an injury, accident, or surgery. Well, you know, she's kind of the poster child for this one because she had a catastrophic accident that almost ended her life. And yet here she is today, and she wrote a book about it. And it was an auto accident. It's called Driving Force: How One Woman Rebounded from Life-Altering Injuries, and You Can Too. Paula, welcome, welcome, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Well, thank you, Dr. Peake. It's a pleasure to be here. I always enjoy sharing my story with people, and I can't tell you how excited I am to be here with you.
Well, this is so cool. First of all, how tall are you if you're in basketball?
Well, I do play under the board sometimes, you know, but I'm five. Well, I used to be 5'6" and a half. I'm hovering around 5'5 and three quarters, I think, at this point in my life.
Okay. Yeah. You know, it's called the bones, getting down to the bare bones. We do drop a little bit in height, but regardless, you know, you do the best you can. How old are you, if you don't mind sharing?
No, I don't mind sharing. I'm 67 currently, but I'll be 68 next month.
Okay. So like, here's an early happy birthday to you, kiddo.
Well, thank you.
You look, by the way, absolutely fantastic. You look like you're ready to rock and roll. Let's go back a little bit. First, I'd like to know a little bit about your past history in just sports before the accident.
Since I was a little girl, I've always played, I've been physically active, let's put it that way. But when I was growing up, you know, Title IX hadn't taken place yet. So there were no organized sports for women. So I played with the guys in the neighborhood. I played football, basketball. Well, we didn't really play basketball as much as we played baseball. And we track and field, like we would have running races and things along those lines. So we made do with what we had. But when I went to high school, I didn't start playing basketball until 10th grade. And I loved the game immediately. I just loved the competition, the movements, the whole aspect of the game of basketball. So much so that when I went to college, that was my main driving force, was to play basketball. So I went to Penn State University and fortunately was able to make the team and played there. And I was living the dream, right? You know what I mean? It was just so exciting to be able to play the game that you love. And for me, basketball was kind of like a metaphor for life. You know, it was that whole combination of knowing how to react quickly to whatever's happening, knowing how to work with your opponents, how to box out, take control, but at the same time, having to score. Because unless you can score points, you don't win. So I played basketball, and then once I got out of college, there wasn't really anything for women. So I started running, and I got in my 30s, I started competitively running. I ran marathons, half marathons, 10Ks, 5Ks, mostly distance type things. And I found that to be very challenging as well, because, you know, it was that whole challenge of how do I manage my energy? And I have to say that in my educational background, when I started running, I knew absolutely nothing. Well, I shouldn't say absolutely nothing, because I majored in health and physical education. So I had anatomy, physiology as an undergrad. But when it came to playing sports, I really didn't understand the exercise science behind that whole aspect of training and getting stronger and what have you. After I spent probably, 12, 15 years in orthotics and prosthetics, I switched careers and went back to school and got my master's in exercise physiology, cardiac rehab.
That makes you a tribal member of the exercise physiology tribe, which is what I'm part of. No wonder that really helped you in a big way. So now you are knowledgeable. You were like, okay, when I'm doing a specific movement, now I understand a lot more about what's going on with my muscles, with my metabolism, also, quite frankly, injuries and the rest of it too.
Exactly. And, you know, and it really does start with your cardiac output and understanding from, with cardiac rehab, you know, we did a lot of stress testing and things along those lines. So I was very familiar with the whole training adaptation of like heart rate response and being able to manage that. So when I went back to running and I started running with this knowledge, oh my gosh, I was knocking minutes off of my times, because I knew how I would use a heart rate monitor. I would run within, you know, an appropriate range for me. I would train at my anaerobic threshold, you know, so that I could adapt my body in a very strategic way, so that I, you know, my performance was getting better. And that was so exciting.
Okay. So when did the accident take place?
Well, this was many, many years later. My running career was mainly in my 30s and 40s. And then I got away from running mainly because I developed endometriosis and ended up having to, you know, like it was the option of having surgery or taking the drug treatment. I did the drug treatment and it had absolutely no effect on the masses that were on my ovary. But I gained probably 60 to 70 pounds as I think I was having a reaction to the, it was horrible. So I couldn't even run. And as a result of going through an experience like that, and then coming out of it, I ended up having to have a total hysterectomy. It didn't work. You know, the whole drug treatment didn't work and things like that. It took me about 3 or 4 years to lose the weight, get back into shape. And, you know, I learned from that experience how important it is to stay focused on what you want. You know, so that was like in my 40s and 50s. The accident occurred just shortly after I turned 60. My birthday's in April. The accident was on September 13th, 2016.
Just tell me it wasn't Friday the 13th.
No, I know. It was a Tuesday.
That would have been the frosting on the cake.
Could have been a whole another story.
Well, tell us what happened.
Well, it was a total surprise. I was on my way to work. It was somewhere around 8:30-ish. And I had an office that was in this area of Pittsburgh called Uptown. It's between downtown Pittsburgh and Oakland. So it's really literally right up the street from Duquesne University and down the street from University of Pittsburgh. I'm at the stoplight of Forbes Avenue in Germanville. And, you know, I had the red light. As the light turned green, I just got a text from the guy that I was supposed to have a meeting with at 9 a.m., and he was frantic. He didn't know the address. So I looked behind me, and there was nobody coming or no one behind me to begin with. So I thought, well, I'll just text him the address. I finished the text, put my phone down, took the wheel, drove forward, and boom, a guy out of nowhere, the bystanders think he was going 55, 60 miles an hour, just slammed right into my driver's side door. It totally took me by surprise. So my reaction was I grabbed the steering wheel while my body just torqued to the left. And as a result, it just snapped my pelvis. I broke some of my lower lumbar vertebrae. My diaphragm ruptured. It was such an impact. It literally almost folded my car in half and pushed my car about 40 feet past the intersection. The back end of my car hit the second row house and then bounced out into the street.
Okay, you said something in the story that was sent to me by the Nashville Senior Games. You had an out-of-body experience, like, okay, I'm dead.
Well, it didn't happen that quickly. It's like, as soon as he hit me, things went black. And then I have no idea how much time passed before I started getting my bearings. But when I started to get my bearings, I noticed something is totally different here. Because I was in Uptown. It was a busy city street. It was a hot and humid Pittsburgh September morning. And here, it was quiet. The sky was crystal blue. There were trees around me. And I looked around and there was like nothing left of my car. There were no doors, no roof, no windshield, no dashboard. But the odd thing was I was still holding the steering wheel and I was still sitting in the driver's seat.
Okay. All right. It was sort of like a hurricane came by and you're kind of sitting there on the toilet in the bathroom, which now has no ceiling or wall.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
Where's my toilet paper?
Yeah. I know, man. Like, whoa. Where's toilet paper when you need it?
That was my response too. I'm like, this is bizarre. And then that's when it dawned on me. Oh my gosh, I think I must have died. And this must be that transition place before you, you know, go off to heaven. And I'm like, whoa, this is wonderful. No pain, totally at peace, super quiet. It was very inviting. I was just like, okay, let's go. You know, that was my attitude. But as soon as I started taking in all of that ambiance, it was like as quickly as the accident happened, boom, hands were coming at me and there was all this chaos. And I'm like, people were reaching into my car and things were just happening at rapid pace. Next thing I know, these two arms, these burly arms came in, grabbed me up underneath my armpits and dragged me out of the passenger window because they couldn't get any of the doors open. That's when all the pain erupted throughout my whole body. And I tried to scream, but I couldn't breathe. I thought I was suffocating.
Well, that's because your lung was collapsed.
Exactly. My diaphragm wasn't working. It would ruptured.
Yeah.
You know, so they dragged me out. They put me on a stoop across the street. And then, you know, and luckily, you know, I'm four blocks away from UPMC Mercy Hospital, which is a trauma one unit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, come on now.
No, I know. I mean, you talk about divine intervention. Like, this was all planned.
No, you couldn't walk there. Like, hey, it's me. I just had trauma, you know.
Yeah, right.
Well, you're in a level one trauma, and I've spent many years doing trauma medicine. So I can imagine when you showed up, we were like, okay, all hands on deck, you know, like this is a royal mess here, and we need to address the issue. So let's flash forward a tad, okay? So you had this absolutely horrific thing. I just, you know, sidebar here quickly. What happened to the other driver?
I'm not real sure. I mean, luckily people had taken pictures and I was able to get the pictures. His windshield, there was a big crack in the windshield and they had a picture of the EMS people working on his head, but he was sitting on a stoop. So I don't know.
So did he ever get cited for T-boning you?
That too, I don't know. I mean, if anything, I think he got a ticket for running the red light.
Okay, so I'm just going to have a moment of rage. All right.
Yeah.
Just it's surging in me. I just want to slap these people down. What the hell? But okay, now I've had my moment of rage. Okay, we're done. Now, you were 60 years old when all this took place. How long were you in the hospital?
I was in ICU about 9 days. They had me on a ventilator. I had multiple surgeries day after day. Unfortunately, you know, like after the first surgery, the second day, they were going to, I think, work on either my bladder or my pelvic injuries. But my heart went into atrial fib because they had given me blood transfusions and they, you know, overflowed my bloodstream more or less. And so, you know, they had to postpone things, get me down.
Yeah, a heart doesn't like that.
Yeah, not a good idea. So by the time they finished all the surgeries and weaned me off the ventilator, it was about 9 days. Then I went to step down. I think I was there maybe 2 weeks or a week and a half. And then I went to skilled nursing. I think I didn't get home for like 30, 31 days.
Wow.
But I did finally make it home. Yeah. In a wheelchair. Yeah.
And did you have a good support system during that time outside of the, you know, obviously the doctors, nurses, and everything else? I mean, tell us about your A-team support system.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have to give total credit to ICU is like phenomenal. Those people were unbelievable. They answered questions. I mean, you snap your finger, they're there, right? And it's so fascinating. The further you get away from ICU, the more it's like, oh, I got to ask for stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I remember when I got into step down, I'm like, where's my pain meds? And they're like, well, you have to request them. I'm like, well, no one told me I had to request them. I'm like, you know.
What about family and friends as your support system?
Yes. Well, by the time, you know, my mom and dad have both passed on. I have a brother and a sister. I'm the middle child. Everybody just kind of, and my cousins and everybody like that, everyone gathered at the hospital, did everything they could. By the time I got home, my friends, teammates, people along those lines, neighbors, you name it, everybody was pitching in. And I have to say, and I mentioned this in my book too, that for me was very overwhelming to be received that much attention and love. Don't get me wrong, it's wonderful. But it was shocking at the same time to know that people care this much, that they did what they did. I mean, food and visits and help. And the one that was like the most outstanding besides my sister was my cousin Glenda, who came from Italy, from Rome, Italy, to live with me because I needed somebody to care for me because I'm single. I live by myself. My bathroom, my bedroom, everything's on the second floor. You know, I was going to be in a wheelchair for months, so I needed someone to care for me.
Did you ever have dark moments? I mean, it's sort of silly to ask that because of course you did, but you know, you're someone who clearly is someone who's more positive and I think sees a way out, a way through is, I think it was Robert Frost said, you know, here you are. Through no fault of your own, this terrible thing happened. And now you've been in the hospital for over a month. Now you're home and you're trying to get it all together, but you are seriously injured and it's going to take a long time to rehab and the rest of it. Dark moments, whatever happened in your head with dark moments, because people need to relate to humanness, our own humanity. So it's not like, oh, well, I got home and we had so many friends and family and whatever, and I got through it. Hold on now. What about those dark moments?
they happened right and left, I have to say. Like, even in ICU, I mean, in ICU, I couldn't sleep. I'd be up in the middle of the night and just reliving the accident. But also, as I mentioned, I'm single and I'm self-employed. And I'm thinking to myself, when I was in ICU, I didn't really fully understand everything that had happened to me, but I knew I wasn't going to be up and about back to work in a couple weeks. This was going to be a long haul, like you mentioned. You know, I would sit there and I'm thinking, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? How am I going to survive this? Every time I got to that deep, dark place, I have to say that moment after the impact where I was holding the steering wheel and sitting on that driver's seat, it kept coming back to me. I'm the one who's in control here. I'm the driver of this. And so, you know, and I realized too, I survived for a reason. Pieces started to come together. And as the pieces came together, that would get me through that one hump. But then another dark moment would happen. Once I got home, I was so excited to get home. But once I got home, I realized I'm trapped. I'm in this wheelchair. My house, to get in and out of any door, there's steps. I can't do anything. I couldn't open the refrigerator door. I couldn't see the bottom of my sink, you know, in my wheelchair. And I wasn't going to be able to bear weight for months, or at least a month, where I was probably about 10 weeks, 10 or 11 weeks. Those kind of thoughts kept eating at me. But the worst one of all, being an athlete and understanding physiology, I'm like, every day I'm sitting here, I'm losing muscle mass. I'm losing cardiac response. I'm just withering away. Now, the one thing I did know was, prior to the accident, I had a coaching program that was called MetaFit Solutions, where I was using metabolic testing equipment to measure people's metabolic rate, to look at it from all angles, to give them feedback on how to manage your life. I did like a pretest, and then we looked at their eating to measure, here's your caloric output. Do you eat in relation to how, you know, you spend your calorie, your energy, and things like that? So I was testing myself. Once I got home, I was able to do like a VO2 test. I had, at the time, you know, this was before Apple Watch, Fitbit, and I had these patches that were measuring, you know, a caloric expenditure based on body heat. And I'm looking at this from a scientific perspective as like, okay, how quickly am I losing all this? And interestingly enough is that I found that my metabolic rate had stayed up because of the trauma. Like, my body was in healing mode because I was worried I was going to gain a bunch of weight and all this other type of thing. So I was able to manage this in a much more, you know, have a better perspective and manage it much more effectively than I think the average person did.
You know, it's interesting. Some of the highest metabolic rates on the planet are in burn victims. I've spent many years in the ICUs. And in the burn units, we literally have to chase after calories because they're seeping everywhere. And the horrific level of trauma to skin is just unbelievable. People just don't grasp it. And remember, skin is this monster organ. And it's, you know, the surface area is extraordinary. So when you went through trauma, yeah, we've actually done measurements in people who've had all kinds of physical trauma. And your metabolic rate will stay quite high for a while because, you know, you're still in your body, sort of a fight and flight place. And pain itself and discomfort itself is a pro-inflammatory state. And that will drive it up as well. But when you had the accident, you were in good form. You were in great shape, right? Generally speaking.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, this is another interesting coincidence. I was starting, you know, to really market MetaFit Solutions, getting it out there. And so I had kind of laid back on my physical fitness. You know, I mean, I was still playing basketball for the senior games and things like that. But interestingly enough, a month to the day of my accident, I started dragon boating. Because a friend of mine had told me about dragon boating. You know, Pittsburgh, we have all these rivers. So, you know, I started going and I'm like, oh my God, this is so anaerobic. I mean, it's a total anaerobic experience, right? And it was getting me into shape. And I think had I not done that, I probably would have had a lot worse of injuries, if you can imagine.
Well, in other words, you're out on the water and you're just working it. Big time. And so to your point, if you hadn't been in pretty good shape, I mean, I think you had a very strong foundation, needless to say, then that may have been much more difficult in terms of rebounding and healing, which is another life lesson here. And that is, you never know. It's sort of like always wear good underwear because you don't know what's going to happen here. You know, someone's going to see what you wore as they're scissoring off all your clothes. So you're in pretty good shape. And then you began the rehab. You got through the dark place. One of the tools you used was to really think about, you know, that whole issue of, it's just such a great visual. I am in the driver's seat. Now, the rest of the car may not be here, but I am in the driver's seat. I have the steering wheel. That is such an incredible metaphor. I mean, the visual is just ridiculous. And so you had to learn how to walk and, you know, do that whole thing. I mean, pelvic fractures, ladies and gentlemen, are not a party. This is pain. And there's probably no position you're in that's not painful or uncomfortable. I can only imagine. So when were you able to kind of get up and really start rocking post your discharge back home?
I wasn't rocking right away because, you know, as you mentioned, pretty much my pelvis just broke in half. Like the four bones that make up the front matrix of the pelvis, all four of those were broken. I had fractures on each side of my SI joint. And the worst break was the sacrum, the right side of my sacrum through the orifices where the, you know, nerve roots come through. That whole side snapped off. So real nice. Yeah. And like nobody was like really willing to say, oh yeah, you're going to be able to run again and jump again.
Well, more importantly, could you even sit? I mean,
exactly.
Jesus God. I mean, that's your tailbone for all intent and purposes. So here you are. It's now a matter of months. And how many months did it take before you really felt like you were over some tipping point that you were going to be okay, still healing, still working it, but when did you start feeling like you were going to be able to kind of get through this?
That's a really good question because it wasn't one moment. I think what started to develop as I started moving forward, it was like I put little mile markers out. And because of the sacral fractures, you know, and my sciatic nerve was impacted, you know, until I could stand up and bear weight and walk, no one knew if I was going to have some type of neurological deficit, like drop foot or pain or whatever. So I'm waiting for my pelvis to heal, you know, so I would set these little mile markers of like, okay, when they took the fixator, I had an external fixator in me or on me, whatever, you know, when that came out, I was able to stand up, but I had to put all my weight on my left leg because I had more fractures on the right side. So that was a big mile marker. And getting to that point made me realize, oh boy, I'm this close to getting out there and walking normally again, you know, because I could walk on crutches. I had a walker and I could spend time in the wheelchair and I can do it with the walker. But then I had a setback. I found out as a result of the impact, my left knee kind of went into a valgus moment and I had an MCL tear, I had a posterior meniscal tear, I had bone fractures, my fibula head was a little, had some like fractures there. And that's my good leg to stand on. And I kept complaining, like, oh, I got all this pain and my knee's buckling. So long story short, you know, the MRI wasn't that I needed surgery, but I had to like not spend as much time as I wanted on my, you know, up vertically walking.
Of course. So now you had another setback. Now we're all the way over to January. We're in the next year.
Yes, we're in the next year. And January 1st, I was allowed to put full weight bearing on both legs. So what did I do? You know, I went out for a walk. I hadn't put any weight on my right side, right? I mean, I used ski poles, like the, you know, the Nordic poles so that I could distribute my weight. I bet you I didn't go a quarter of a mile and I like sprained my ankle. Like, you know, my whole right side was so weak. It was so deconditioned. My adductors were sore. And so I had to learn the hard way. I kept trying to dummy down my starting point as low as I could possibly imagine, and it still was too much.
And that's another huge lesson, to say the least. So we're in January. So my question now, because I want to really get up to some life lessons here. When did you go back to the Senior Olympics on the basketball team?
So January, I started physical therapy, you know, and I started swimming because I couldn't spend a lot of time vertically, but horizontally, it was so refreshing because I could feel my body generating power and I could see myself moving. I did that from probably March until August. I was to the point where I was swimming an hour. I mean, I was like making great progress. And I thought, oh, you know, I'll be able to play. We always have a Delaware tournament in October. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm ready, you know. But here, as I was swimming, I re-ruptured my diaphragm and ended up having to have another surgery. And that didn't take place until December, you know, because they had to do all these tests and everything. So now this is 2017. I had my surgery December of 2017. In 2018, April of 2018, I played at Slippery Rock. That's our state games, you know, qualifying tournament. I didn't play a lot. I mean, I got out on the court and I played, you know, and I had been practicing and doing a bunch of things. But my real test, like where everything came together, was in 2019 at the Albuquerque games down in Albuquerque. That was my comeback moment. I played almost, you know, on all the games that, and I think we ended up probably fifth or sixth in the nation that year.
That is amazing. So here you are, and we're in 2024. You wrote a book called Driving Force, How One Woman Rebounded from Life-Altering Injuries. Let's talk about some of the life lessons that come out of this. We all know in life that things are going to happen. I mean, come on, this is life. So any 5 seconds, something could happen. We have to be prepared mentally, physically, spiritually. We just have to be prepared. And this way, like a fine athlete, when the rain starts in the middle of Wimbledon, you could pivot. You could adapt and adjust, which is what I love to call it, and be able to make it work. We will have really tough things. We may not have a car crashing into us. Other things will happen. So based upon your experience, toss us a few lessons, some tools and lessons.
Well, that, you know, the saying, hindsight is 20/20. When I was at those different stages, you know, I just kept moving forward. I couldn't really see clearly. It was after, when I wrote the book, I began to see these principles that really made up how I made it onto the court at Albuquerque. And those principles, I think, are what a lot of people need to hear, because the first one is to embrace your own power. And that's your power to heal. But I think more importantly, too, it's that power to change, to pivot, like you're saying, you know, because things are going to come at you and you have to realize you have the power to make things happen. But the second principle that I used is that you have to envision the outcome that you want. And that's what I kept doing. Like when I mentioned earlier about the mile markers, you know, I honestly, at the very beginning, did not set a vision for being back out on the basketball court, because I really didn't know whether or not I was going to be able to do that. My vision instead was to become well again. You know, I knew from a physiological perspective, my body was going to heal, whether I was on board with it or not. It was going to continue to heal. And how well it healed was my input. I realized that by me taking the you know, the steering wheel and driving this, I could get myself to a level of being happy, being the person that I am. And who I am is an active person. I'm multi-talented. I like to garden. I like to do do-it-yourself things. I love sports. I love being with people. I love coaching people. And it's like, I may not be able to do it as well as I did before, but I could do something that would give me that self-satisfaction. And I think that's the thing that I've realized with a lot of people that are in a recovery or going through life, that they don't necessarily have the vision of finding fulfillment. It's like their vision is kind of like, I got my knee replaced. I just want to be able to walk again. I want to be out of pain, right? And there's something beyond that, because you will be able to walk at the end of 8-10 weeks, you know, with that new knee. You will be able to bend your knee. You may not get to 120, 130 degrees, but you're going to get some flexion. You're going to be considered a successful surgery. But are you really experiencing the life of who you are? And I think when medical things happen to us in life, a lot of people are like, oh, don't let that happen. You know, I don't want that to happen. I don't want to be in this situation. But it's actually the best place to be to learn about how resilient you are. Because, you know, you have this magical moment of your body is in high test healing mode. And if you ride that wave of healing and stay the driver of it, you can take that recovery to remarkable places.
I love that whole, again, the metaphor of driving. You know, I can't get my head out of that picture of you in the driver's seat with the steering wheel that's not attached to anything. But that's very powerful. I took a group of wild and crazy patients of mine called the Peak Performers, and we trained for the New York Marathon. Little did we know that I was already a marathoner, and none of them were, but they were staying right on top of their health and running and whatever. So about 8 months of training and really staying on top of it. And then 9/11 happened. We were the group that ended up running 6 weeks after 9/11, because that's when the New York Marathon takes place, which is the first weekend in November. You can only imagine what was going on in our heads, because we were all based in Washington, D.C., so we already had our horror there with the Pentagon, and now we're going from the fry pan to the fire, you know, where the towers and the whole thing. We were actually running. I was working very closely with my publisher at the time, Rodale, with Prevention Magazine, and they made T-shirts for us that said, "The marathon is a metaphor for life." To your point about whatever the sport may be, whether it's basketball or whatever, there are milestones. There's the challenge that constantly takes place mentally, physically throughout. So when you're going out on the court and you're bouncing the ball, you got a challenge. You know, someone wants that ball from you, and your job is to kind of do your thing. When you're out there running, it's like, okay, first mile, second mile, honey, you got a whole lot of miles ahead of you, but you know what you say to yourself? I got through that one. Always be forward thinking, not like, oh, damn, I can't believe it. Oh, I'm exhausted. I just ran 6 miles. No, you got another six to go just to hit half marathon, girlfriend. Keep it going. And then your mind goes to wild and crazy places. Well, the same thing happens in life. Whether you're, you know, in an airport and you're on the 13th delay for the stupid flight, you're trying to get the hell out of there, and you just want to rip your hair out in everyone else's eyes, can you just kind of take a deep breath and realize, hey, I'm going to get out of here one way or the other. It may not be pretty, but I will be out of here. Just like you said, and I really glommed onto that when you said, you know, my body's going to heal. It's going to take its time. It's going to do its thing, but I'm going to facilitate it. I'm going to do the absolute best I can. God bless America. But I am going to make this work, and I'm going to help support this entire effort. So that's one of the things I really like about what you've said. And that is, we spend so much time in what I call sort of practice mode. Every day we work out, we, you know, eat well, you know, we try to, you know, socialize, do our, and then all hell breaks out one day. And then all the stuff that you laid down as a foundation, you can now leverage and draw upon. You had your A-teams, you know, you have wonderful family and friends. You also were very fortunate to have a superb trauma unit and all the rest of it. But most importantly, you had your brain. You had knowledge. You had a deep faith in what was going to be taking place with your incredible body. And that, I think, really, really helped you. So that so many times people just find themselves descending down the rabbit hole of helplessness, hopelessness, and defeat. And then that will, of course, lend itself to depression and just this whole feeling of, I'm just not going to make it. Go back to everyone out there in the Her Podcast land. Just imagine holding on to the steering wheel that's not attached to anything else. And you're the driver. This is your driving force to be able to get through everything that takes place in life. You got this. You just have to believe it. You know, Flo Jo, the famous sprinter, who I just loved. I was following everything, including her wild and crazy nail colors. She always said, everything begins with belief. There are three words that ruled her, and she taught them to her little daughter. Believe, achieve, succeed. Just those three words. It starts with a deep, profound belief that, yeah, you can pull this sucker off. You can do it. It may not be pretty. It may take a while. A lot of work. Hello, work. I mean, there's only one place where success comes before work, and that's in the dictionary. Would you just always remember you got to work? Do hard things. That's what you have to do. You have no choice.
You know, Dr. Peake, that is like really, really powerful what you're saying. And it helps me to remember then, like part of with my book and what I've developed as a result of the accident in writing the book, this coaching program that I, you know, calling myself the Rebound Planner, taking rebounding in basketball was something I kept holding on to because I'm 5'5", 5'6", you know, something like that. The whole principle behind rebounding is learning to position yourself to get the ball. And if you get to that spot first and your opponent is behind you, you command the power of where the ball is going to come. If it comes to you, you have it, you have a chance to score again. I kept remembering that and I kept thinking in terms of, you know, when my opponent is behind me, I can't see them. They're not a threat to me now. All I can see is the opportunity to get the ball and score. And I kept thinking about that as I was going through my recovery. And that's what I share with a lot of people too, is like, put behind you, like you said, if people who focus on everything that can go wrong, they're putting that right in front of them. And they're trying to go one-on-one with the thing they don't want. But if you put your opponent behind you and you position yourself to control them, you can't help but succeed.
Rebounding is so amazing. I just read the other day that there was some young woman in a college, I think it was a college somewhere, who just broke some kind of a rebound record. She did actually 43 rebounds in one game. It's like, well what? Oh my gosh. And apparently she's just like a rebound queen. But again, more metaphors. Something didn't go so well. Grab the ball again. Let's do it again. All right. Just keep doing it again. Do it again. And that's what you have to do. Period. End of story. And that's what life's all about. And the more you wrap your head around that, the less shocked you are with having to regroup, with having to go through all the work. And do not be afraid of hard work. Hard work is good. It's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
Name one thing in your life that's worthwhile, that's not associated with hard work. Just one thing. Come on now. I'm just saying, go through your life. I think that this is one of the reasons why I grabbed you immediately as a beautiful example of someone who regrouped, was able to tap into resilience that she'd been building for a long time. And that's also another issue. Every day, test your resilience. find little things. Like you say, oh my God, I'm going to have to talk to that one person, that annoying, irritating human being in my life. It could be family, it could be work, whatever. Okay, test your resilience, hone your skills. Come on now. Never run from an opportunity to do that kind of work, because it's work. Can you deep breathe through it? Can you stay calm and centered, focused, determined? Can you do all that? All through the day, you know, one of my patients once said, she was, you know, I was sort of teaching her this and back and forth. She said, Dr. Peak, I wake up in the morning now, I've got a brand new attitude. And I said, really? And what is your brand new attitude? She says, I sit bolt upright in bed after I say my gratitudes and I say, bring it on. And I want to grow hair on my chest. Come on now. Just challenge me all day. I said, whoa, you're saying all this before coffee? I'm highly advising you not to drink coffee. Oh my gosh. But you know, I saw she reached a tipping point in her life where she suddenly saw. And just like you said, you have to see where you're going. There has to be a vision, a forward thinking. I think too many people just spin the past too much. It's like, oh, woulda, coulda, shoulda. No, forward thinking. The past is good for one thing, ladies and gentlemen. One thing, learning. It's either going to be a vanilla experience like, meh, you know, not much, or you're going to learn a whole lot, good, bad, and otherwise. You're going to learn. And then if you're smart, you take those lessons and you apply them to your life going forward. Rock and roll. Make sense?
Oh, totally makes sense. You know, because even with the analogy of the driving force, the, you know, steering wheel and the seat, you know, the more I kept thinking about that, you realize even an automobile, like the automobile to me was like our human body, but I'm the one that determines where we're going to go in this automobile. And that's the piece I think that is missing. You know, medicine is going to help the body get better. You know, whatever's broken, it's going to get fixed, you know, to whatever degree. But it's you as the individual that is the driver who's going to get you to the place in life you want to be.
Paula, you're amazing. I cannot thank you enough for being on the Her podcast. I want everyone to remember Paula Frannetti, that's Frannetti. Her book is Driving Force, How One Woman Rebounded from Life-Altering Injuries, and You Can Too. And where's the best place where people can learn more about your work and your coaching?
You can go right to my website, reboundplanner.com. And on the website, it explains a little bit about my coaching and who I am and what have you. The book is also available. If a person wanted a personalized autographed book, they can order it on my website. If not, you can get it on Amazon and Kindle or as a paperback.
Excellent. And she's got a beautiful YouTube channel as well, but you're going to learn all about that at her website. And I just want to thank you one more time for sharing what was an incredible experience, a life-altering experience for you, and to once again lend credibility and affirmation to always being prepared for whatever life is going to throw your way and taking good care of your mental, physical, and spiritual fitness is foundational to this. Paula, thank you so much for being on the Her podcast.
Oh, it's my extreme pleasure, Dr. Peak. And I truly admire what you're doing. And, you know, I hope that we can stay in touch and continue learning together.
Oh, trust me, we will. You will become a repeat offender, which means that you'll be back on the show for sure. And listen, everyone. Oh my gosh, what a great show. Here's another shout out to our sponsors, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y. Ah, vitamins, minerals, and herbs rooted in nature. Remember to go on over to your local health food store. Ask about the new award-winning Her Life Stages products. And check it out at the health food store or run on over to solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off the products. Yay. Look, this has been another amazing Her podcast. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, your host, and I want to thank each and every one of you for listening in and being such an important part of our Her podcast community. Pop on over to drpeek.com to learn more about my work and social media. Join me every single week for another Her podcast, where you're going to hear from extraordinary, entertaining, and engaging thought leaders, just like Paula Frenetti, as we share our wit and wisdom for you to enjoy. Thanks so much, and remember that your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. So get on out there and seize the day. Have a great one, everyone.